गणानन्त्वा गणपतिगुं हवामहे कविं कवीनामुपमश्रवस्तमं ज्येष्ठराजं ब्रह्मणां ब्रह्मणस्पत आनश्रृण्वन् मूर्तिभिः सेधसादनम् ॐ श्रीमहागणपतये नमः। सदाशिवसमारम्भां शङ्कराचार्यमध्यमाम् अस्मदाचार्यपर्यन्तां वन्दे गुरुपरम्पराम्। ॐ सहनावतु, सहनौ भुनक्तु, सह वीर्यं करवावहै, तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै। ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। वेदान्तडिण्डिमास्तत्त्वम् एकमुद्घोषयन्ति यत् आस्तां पुरस्तात् तत्तेजः दक्षिणामूर्तिसंज्ञितम्। सो वन् आफ् दि टर्म्स् दे यूस् फोर् मास्टर् फोर् ज्ञानी, दे लैक् टु यूस् द टर्म् धीरः धीरः। सो दिस् केन् हेव् टु मीनिङ्ग्स्। One meaning is viveki, somebody who has the sharp intellect to do the discrimination, atma and atma viveka. So in this way, through the intellect, using this instrument, very clearly seeing this difference, which is really the base of our vichara, of this investigation that we do, to look into it. And once it's clear, then the anatma will fall off, as mitya will be very clear. So this is one meaning. But the other meaning also is somebody who is extremely brave, is tremendous bravery like this. Because what happens is we have to go totally against the current of everything. All the currents are going one way, and we're used to having things in one way, but totally going the opposite. And it's not easy to do, because it's much easier just to continue life as the rest of the world is doing, very simple. And I'm already used to, I'm very comfortable in my ways. It's very, you know, we get comfortable in this body and this little setup that I have around me. So much easier just to stay with that. Of course, it takes a lot more first understanding, both courage and understanding, to look around and see things a little differently. You know, just to see, okay, anything that comes into existence, the next moment it changes. It's not a solid reality. So, oh, but it's, you know, I can still have my tea every morning and I have my comfortable bed and this, you know, and comfortable, you know. So it's okay, I can just lean on that. So it's much easier to do that. So it takes tremendous courage to really look into it and really inquire, and not just make it an intellectual exercise. We can intellectually understand, but we may understand a whole, you know, whole slew of points in Vedanta, become scholars of it. Somebody else may just know a little bit, but they really, with the little bit they know, they really looked into. So they have, their knowledge is more, you know, it's their knowledge, it's not just an intellectual knowledge like this. So this is why one needs tremendous courage to do that, because you're going against, you're really learning to put everything else aside, not lean on it like this. So this is why you'll see people, Mahatmas who really have looked into this, you can see that they're, one of the signs is that they don't have fear. What is there to be afraid of them? The fear comes because of my identification as the individual, identification with the body mostly. So, because I take that to be me, I didn't look into it. Somebody sees they're not, okay. Whatever will be at the body will be at the body, okay, like this. Like when my guru, he went on some peace missions. He learned to fly a plane, and people were saying, why is he learning to fly a plane like this? So he flew on peace missions to different places. So people would say, yeah, but what happens that, you know, if you get shot down on this? He says, yeah, you'll follow me very soon, you know. And how many people die in the name of war? So some people can die in the name of peace, like this. When he flew, he would go to the troubled areas and fly. So he flew from Israel to Egypt in the 70s, or early 70s, something like this. So I know the person who is his co-pilot, Bren Jacobson. So he... So what happens is when they were flying, then they thought that they were shot. You know, they thought that they were shot. So Swami Vishnu said, okay, it's time to meditate. You know, so like this, because he thought, okay, they'll crash. So, okay, so the mind should be in the right place and you die. Imagine you're in a plane, you think it's going to crash. You'll be able to sit quietly and meditate. No, because, okay, well, that's what you have to do. If you're going to die, you have to take your attention there. So in this way, so dhira, this is a signpost like this. Because all the fears come from our attachments, from our and number one attachment to the body, like this. It's just one thought on this. And actually, the kind of like the ego will fight for existence, like this. It won't want to let go. And what'll happen is, if something wants to hold on and fight, it'll use whatever tactics it can have. So, a lot of excuses the mind will come up with to not look into the, not look deeper. It'll come up with different excuses, like a guerrilla warfare, attacking here and there, you know, bringing up tensions, bringing up excuses, bringing up whatever it'll do in order not to look into in this way. So this is something we have to be aware of, because it's it wants to be there. I'm uncomfortable looking into, or, you know, it'll raise many doubts, all these different things. So you have to say nope. That's why the tremendous shraddha needed, tremendous conviction. Yes, I'm going to look to, it doesn't matter. Because otherwise, you know, because we, again, we don't look into completely because of this, because of not enough of this shraddha, if you want, or conviction. So let's see where we were at here. We're looking at verse 42, I believe, before last class that we had our questions and everything. So here it's saying, Bhitva shad pancha bhitvata bhitvata chaturas chaturastrikam dvayam hitva shrayedhekam iti vedanta dindimaha. So Vedanta proclaims that the seeker should get rid of the six infirmities, the five sense pleasures, the four mind modifications, and the three attachments. Further, the seeker should give up the divisive tendency and take refuge in the non-dual reality. So we already tackled some of these. We faced them completely. And we should always be ready to really look at to what happens is, somebody, if I have a false notion that I have gone beyond something, I should be very careful, because the false notion can always be there that I've reached something. So there's always the example they say that somebody tells the guru, you know, I really worked hard at it for the last few years, but I've really overcome anger. I don't get angry at all. We've heard the story, I'm sure all of us. So the guru then says, really, you have? Yes, yes, I really have. Are you sure? Not even a little bit, you know, children, wife, do something. No, 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 I really don't. Really? Never work, never anything. No, 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 I really don't. Not even a little bit. No, I'm telling you, I gave up anger. I'm not angry. Don't get angry at anything. So it's very easy to think I've gotten somewhere. So one has to be alert and really, you know, when viveka is clear, it's clear. One doesn't think. You know. When I know something, I don't think I know. I just know. So in the meantime, one has to really be alert and, you know, aware of all this. That yes, to be, I'm a seeker, meaning I need to follow and, you know, follow the seeking path, not get caught up in these other things. So in any case, so we discussed about the kama, krodha, lobha, these, the negative qualities. We discussed that a little more in depth than everything. And then they all come from, everything starts from the misunderstanding, of course. Because of misunderstanding, I don't see clearly. Then I have some different idea about myself, nita avidya, and from that some attachment comes. From there, raga, vesha, likes, dislikes come. Then, because that there's desire, and because of desire, then from that anger, greed are born like this, everything comes. In the Gita, towards the end of the second chapter, one verse just points that whole, how that whole thing happens. Jayato vishayam pumsa, sangaste shupa jayate, sangat sanjayate kamaha, kama krodho bijayate. Another verse continues with the same line of thought, but you dwell on the objects of the world, meaning objects of the senses. The more you dwell on them, then some attachment comes, some idea. What is attachment? You have a more solidified idea about it. The more solidified idea, then some desire is there to keep it in that way or to make a change, because now my idea is more solidified. Now, if something goes against that, then I want to have it in that way. I want to keep it in this way, in this manner. And from that, then, of course, the desire is too much unfulfilled, too much things fighting against it, then the anger is born. Or if I manage to get and keep it, then the greed is there. I want to keep it and hold on to it, and etc. So in this way. And then we talked about the five sense pleasures, meaning I five senses. And I'm very attached to having certain things, accustomed to things through there. And when it's not like that, then what? So it's actually good. That's one of the main reasons and disciplines in all religions for fasting at a certain time. Or certain disciplines in order not to be too caught up in the things of the senses. And then learning not just to have it, how I like all the time. And seeing where is it that my attachment is stronger to things of the senses, and those I have to become more flexible and drop, because it's just binding me to a certain idea, that certain limitation. I have to, have food of this kind, right? I have to, have, if it's a little different, if things are slightly different, no, I don't like. So in this way, not to be too caught up in this. That was the five, and then the four we discussed last time, which is the antakarana. Right? I have my manaha, the thinking, doubting part, the emotions, which I get caught up in all these ideas. And it's running around and changing so much, so I have to learn how to step back and not be too caught up in it, because how many things has the mind thought, how many emotions have come up, and they come and go, and then I'm back to where I was before. So emotions come up and I strongly identify with them. When emotion is a movement in the mind, it's going to come, it's going to go, and then something else. And the more I identify with the sorry go round, right? It's very wonderful I was coined sorry go round, because merry go round, you get on, you enjoy, you get off. Sorry, or maybe you're suffering a little bit because you got dizzy, okay, it'll stop in a minute and then you get off. But here, you can't get off. So in this way, not to be too caught up in that. So emotions come, I know it's a good challenge that I'm observing the emotion. The emotion, whose emotion is it? You observe that. You do viveka, there's the whatever emotion it is, the excitement. There's excitement now. And there's, am I the excitement, or I'm the one who's experiencing the excitement? Which one am I? That excitement, it will be for some time, it will be gone. Will I be the same one, or will I be something else? Who's identifying with the excitement in me? In this way, to slowly look at it like this. And then the manaha, the buddhi, the intellect, the clear thinking. One thing is somebody who's very learned, who knows something very well. The ego can be, I know this. Right? I'm the expert. You don't tell me. You can't say anything because I know like this. And so that's one thing one has to be careful with any sort of scholarship or knowledge somebody has. I identify that's me. I know. The reverse side is too. Oh, you know, my brother, he's a doctor. He knows very well. I'm just a simple person. I didn't go to college. I don't know. So, you know. I don't understand things well. Also, I identify my intellect that doesn't know. So in this way, it's just a tool, very good tool, very important tool, but it's also a tool. So manaha, buddhi, citta, the memory, in this way. The memory also is, where's the, you know, how they have the hard drive. Now you put a backup there. So you have a backup, you pull things up from the backup. It's a memory. You know, for sure this happens to you. You get together with siblings or friends from childhood. Oh yes, this event and this. They'll say, no, it happened like this. No, I know, I remember completely was like this. There'll be discrepancies. So your memory is perfect like this? And it's just, again, I carry that whole idea. When I'm just present, where's my whole the whole thing? Once in a while, things from memory come up in the mind, and they go away. I hold on to it as a reality, as it's the historic person. I identify with the historic person. Where's that whole thing, historic person? I'm right here now. So if you, the more I carry that with me, then instead of being 50, 60, you know, I carry 50 years of history with me. Where? The child carries, you know, the last few moments of history. That's it, very light. So we want to travel light. So travel light. I'm just here now and that's it. The more we can drop that, I'm good. Whatever essentially has been learned from and gained from, it'll be there. It's in the character, so it doesn't, you know, I don't have to go back to it in this. So this is, you know, with this. Samyanu Bhavanandaji. He likes to, I've heard his recording, so he likes to tell people, you know, okay, we're having, you know, special mantra diksha. And he would say, you know, okay, what is today? The 27th, no? Yeah, February 27th, 2022, 8:20 a.m. Like this. For Sasi Devi, 11:20 a.m. You can't go to the best. 11:20 a.m. for us, 8:20 a.m. Like this, say that. Now, that's it. Meaning, there's nothing before this. Now talk. Like, okay, what's there for you to talk about? I came here, oh no. Yeah, before I went, all that stuff gone. You can't speak of before this moment. You know, nice exercise. But through understanding again. You know, then somebody will say, where did you grow up? What did you grow up? You know, it's not such important information for us, that's all. And actually, showing this, the whole system of all these texts and everything, they didn't keep a chronology and, okay, history of the rishis in this. They didn't keep it because, you know, that's why there's scholars have their differences on when Adi Guru Shankara lived. Such a huge discrepancy that, you know, argue this. If it was 1500 years ago, 2500 years ago, doesn't matter, it's the same thing, the essence of the same thing. So this is why that wasn't as important. The essential thing is important. Because they didn't take themselves as a historical self, so why should they put down their whole history and record it in this? So in this way, the memory then also, that the identification with it is the problem. Again, it's identification with. Any tool that's useful for something can be used. Swami Shivananji wrote, his biography, he wrote, he was asked, so he wrote some things in order just to give an example, you know, not out of identity with like this. So anything, that tool that's useful is used, but it's, again, it's just an instrument. It's not the essence. Because, okay, my history and where did it start? I go back so much and then what? Right? And this whole big history I'm talking about, after a little while it'll end, I'm finished. And so where's all that history? Where does it go? to say, yes, yes, but now I remember my previous lives in this. So even more, imagine you can remember a batch of lives from before, much more of a headache. How many more problems are to me and we have to deal with in this? Even more difficult, more attachments and everything. Oh, that person, that was my brother in the other life in this, so I have to, and this, but the life before is my enemy in this. Oh, how complicated. So our memory, and then of course the chief of staff, the ahankara, this one. This one also has to be understood that I'm not that. I'm not, because what happens any, I know that I am. The moment I say I am something, then I'm identifying with some limited idea of myself. Because I am is there, that's clear. When it's something, that something is an idea I'm holding on to now. And that idea won't be stable, it's going to change. So it belongs to somehow this entity, the ego, is born, though it doesn't, it has a function, of course, but it doesn't have a substance. Just like when you look up to the sky, then you see the dome of the sky. So you can see it, but the dome of the sky is not there. Just seems to be. So something here has to seem to be to hold all of this together. But holding what together? What's holding the wave together? Nothing's holding it together. It's a fluid thing, and it came up, and it'll disappear, and that's it. But you say, something's holding it together. Nothing's, it's manifest out of in nature. It's just part of nature, comes and goes. So there's something holding this whole identity together. That the stronger I'm holding that together, the more of a headache I give myself and others, like this. So in this way, this false identity we have, so that has to be looked into again and again, because that's, this misidentification is the biggest issue I have. And this one keeps identifying with different things. Just look throughout the day, different times I'm identifying with different roles or different things. And those things are gone afterwards, and I'm identifying something else. And when I'm just present doing something, it's not even there. I don't think about it, which is so much of the time, but I forget, I don't notice it. So in this way, this one part of us, one part of the mind is, the most mischievous, and also the one you can never put your finger on or catch. It's kind of like when there's some criminal activity done, they go and they catch three of the criminals and one is at large, and they never manage to catch that one. So you catch, okay, I see, that's my manaha, that's my buddhi, that's my citta. Yes, the ahankara, you don't find. It's always at large. Because it's not as easy to identify. It's footprint you can identify. But it itself, because when you try to look at it, it's gone, it's not there. You can't find it. So, very tricky, but the thing is, just the viveka helps, because the more I drop my other ideas about myself, the less it's going to trap me like this. So this is these four that have to be also to be taken care of like this. And then we get to the three, right? Trikam. So we've three, also the three here, adibhuta, Adhyatma and Adhideva, these three. I break things down pertaining to Adhyatma, pertaining to me, this individual, this body. Adibhuta, to the material things around. And Adhideva, to the something greater, the gods or the god or something behind. So I take things and I break them into these different categories. In Gita, then Lord Krishna is explaining how he's the one behind all of these in this way, to show there's the one thing behind all of them. So I have the Adhyatma identify as this individual, this body. This is one thing. I say this one is one part, one thing, and it's separate from everything else. So this is something that the identification can be quite strong. And he's going to then elaborate on this pretty soon in other verses too, in here, because of its importance. But the moment I identify as the body, it's what happens is it's connected to so many other things. Just like I was just listening online about, I said, okay, I know many people get this miracle grow to put in their garden for their vegetables. So I never really looked in. I just assumed it's a bad thing. Because I said, okay. I said, let me see what people say about it. Maybe, you know, putting vegetable garden, their soil will be better. So what happens is a lot of chemicals in it, first of all. So your whole natural soil isn't natural anymore. And the company that sells it sell a lot of different pesticides and fertilizers, chemical ones, because first ruin the soil with their product, and then you need to use these amendments like this. So very quickly you get vegetables and everything, flowers, whatever you're growing, but you know, it's a package deal. One thing, and then all the other stuff is going to come. So identification with the body is just one thing. Okay, put just the soil, but then so many other things will come. Like the same thing happens in rural places in India, where they make the farmers buy their seeds instead of just the seeds they have. But then, it's a package deal. Now they need the fertilizer and all of the sprays and everything from that company. And then also they generated the seeds so it won't bring the next generation. Now they're caught, they have to buy the seeds from there instead of keeping their own seeds for the next year. So in this way, it's trapped. So identification of the body is just, it's one small thing, this body, but how much is connected to it? Identify with the body, so identify with, you know, with family, with nationality, with religion, with gender, with who knows what else. How much more is going to be? I'm deaf, so I belong to the deaf people's club in this, right? I have something, I went to a certain school because this body identify, okay, now I belong to that club. And even 30 years later, since I went to UC Berkeley, then even 30 years later, when Berkeley and Stanford are going to have their game, I'm going to root for Berkeley. All just because I identify, this one hub connects to so much. Because the center of my identity here, such a strong center in this way. So when I learn just to look at, okay, this body, idam shariram kaunte, yeah, this body, is, that's why we say, you know, look at this body, and really, one of the biggest things, just to, in you know, great goal is just to have the understanding that I'm not this body, just that one, already what a huge difference it makes, like this. So this one really needs to look into, and he's going to elaborate on very soon, so we don't need to go too much more into now, because next verse is going to be, sneak peek, his next verse, if you haven't looked ahead, is talking about the body. And then, so that's one thing, so I'm attached to so many things about the body. Okay, so that's one thing. Second one, because I break into three, the thing is, I break the whole creation to three, and then I've hold on to ideas about each one of them and about how each one sits in its nook. It's kind of like what happens is, here it'll say three. Then you're going to have, the Sankhyas will say, no, it's two. Then certain Shaivas will say 17 tattvas. It's, you know, different ones. You can, you know, when you look at you in different ways, you can break down and look how everything is. But then you become, this is how it is. Instead of, this is a way, in order just to look at the universe. This is a way to do it. No, this is how it is. What the other people are saying is wrong. A way to analyze, that's it. You know, psychologists probably, they'll take and they'll say about tendencies. There are three kinds of people with tendencies. No, there are 10, there are 2, and each one is going to be very vehement about their theory. It's just a way to look at things. So the second here, adibhuta or adibhautika, is about the meaning, about the material universe. So what happens here again, there's material universe, so there's mine and not mine. This one is mine, this is my house, that's my neighbor's house. the fence, well, it is mine and theirs, it's kind of shared, okay, so if something wrong, they have to fix it. It's not fair like this, it's a border like this. But the tree I planted on my side, so, you know, I've heard this. There are people that will plant the tree, and then, so they have nice fruits in this, but some are going to the neighbor's yard and they're enjoying it, so they'll cut down the tree. No, it's my tree, how can they enjoy this? So, in this way, so I identify with the objects in this way. And I have a nice house, then I meet somebody and I go visit their house, and their house is a little bit bigger and fancier, so I feel very bad because my house isn't as big and fancy as their house. My teacher, Vijayji, he once was somewhere where there was get-together groups amongst the richest Indian people in the Bay Area. So, you know, these are amongst richest, very rich. So one of them there was feeling very, you know, had some insecurity because the others had larger private jets than him. I can only afford a small private jet. The others have nice big fancy ones. Like this. So just to be aware, yes, there's some objects around that I can use, but then they're just there. What do I call mine? The day when I have to leave this world, what can I call mine here? Swami Premananji in Uttarkashi, you know, he was just on his own. Then he had small kutia in this. And then Swami Chirananji had that land and said, you know, Shivashram, and Swami Ramsurpananji actually built the first building there and everything. And then people would come and ask, why don't you have disciples? He said, what for? All that's going to happen is they're going to fight over this small piece of land when I die. What do you need that for? Like this. So he doesn't think of it as my place, my thing. Because that one, the moment you think so, place that you use. House that you use. Guess you need a plate. I need food and some food, some, you know, suitable for the body. Some clothes, it's cold, or and place to stay. And more than that, what do you need? So we have all these, and then even with that, the idea of mine goes in very, you know, very deep in it. It's something that I use, something that is, you know, that is just the more I identify with the things around, the more, you know, I'm caught up in all this stuff with mine. So my house, my college, my country, my sports team, my political party, my with this. There's a Sanskrit Subhashita saying that, because in Sanskrit, me is mine. So it says, I don't recall the exact word, but it says like me, my family, my house, my this, my this. He said, the one who says me, like a sheep, the wolf of time is going to gobble them up. So if we say me, the wolf is going to hear in this way. So to be aware of it, that whatever I think, the stronger I think of it as mine, the more pain is going to be when it doesn't, it's and not in my hands, or not doing how I want it to do. This is what happens. So, and look, what hurts us the most is what's closest to us. Of course, if somebody, you know, take one step, somebody's college or something, that somebody identifies their company or whatever, and then the company is taken away from them, or they get fired. Some people start their own company, after some time they get kicked out. How painful that must be in this way. My ashram, I know people at ashram, and then later they have to leave. One Swami in our ashram, when I was in the ashram in this, then it asked at some point to leave. How difficult for this person, how much, and this is somebody who's renounced everything, but it's my ashram, right? Like this. How difficult. So that, like this, but then you get even closer, my family. The family members don't do how I want in this way. And that's the most trying, like this, because I have an idea how it should be. But each person's free, they do how they want. So they help to teach us on our own skin like this, to learn, if I don't have some vairagya, then it'll hurt me more. More vairagya, it'll be easier. Each person has their way to do. And just because that one I consider as in my small circle, the identification is stronger. And so it's a very good lesson like this for us to learn in that way. We have to love support, but then everybody does how they think. We can't control, you know, we can't control anything in others. We can try by force here. We have now a wonderful example. One of the biggest powers in the world trying to force another very small one to do what they want. And they're saying, no, we're going to keep fighting, we don't care. So you can't force anybody. And you can try to impose, but it doesn't work well, and just headache for everybody. So for me to try to impose doesn't work. So in this way. So this is, and you know, with family, especially children, more, as they grow, then you do have the duty to take care of them and raise them and discipline in this. But at some point, then have to let go. How difficult? So it's a great lesson. I'm sure it's a great lesson. You all either went through or are going through learning this. I can just speak from theory, so I can't tell you myself like this. But it's probably a great lesson. What greater lesson than to learn like this? If as a mother can learn to, as kids grow, and to detach, what a great thing. What a great opportunity to learn like this, to just love and accept without attachment. It's a great lesson for life like this. So in any case, so this one, all the things around that I identify with, even people I put into that things, because again, it's things and beings around me, the world around me, in this way that I break into mine, not mine, and stronger mind, more identification, everything in this way. So this is something to be looked at. And then lastly, adhideva, pertaining to, beyond what I'll say, you know, beyond this, what's beyond this manifest world. So again, we'll have certain ideas about it, and the ideas can be helpful. Okay, somebody believes there's a heaven, and they want to be a good person, so they can go to a better place afterwards, to heaven. That's swarga, that's what it is, meaning a better place, go to a better place. So it gives the incentive to be a better person, live by dharma. So it's an incentive for that. So that's the reason for that, is to say I should do good. Okay, very good. But then I get very attached. This is how they say the heaven is. This is how in my church or my temple or this, or the Buddha said heaven is, and you're saying different. I don't, you know, you're totally wrong. I had a friend when I went to college, a Korean fellow, who used to go to church regularly. So he saw, okay, this is a nice person in this, but I don't follow, you know, he goes to the church and they tell him whatever they say there. So he was concerned. He said, you know, but, you know, Jesus saves, so what'll happen to you? So I said, yeah, my guru is like that, he'll save me too. And he kind of looked, he kind of didn't think, no, I don't. So, think that my way, my God is good, what the others, I don't know, in this way. So, this thing. And I also think, okay, there's certain powers behind the universe, so I need to pacify them so that they don't do something to me or this. Yeah, okay, you can do something, some good or something good, but then, if I think of it as the powers of the universe, the God is something that's going to punish me if I'm not doing like this, then instead of having the spirituality help to make me grow beyond my fears and attachment, it'll make me more fearful. If I don't follow the ritual in this way, I don't know what's going to happen to me. I'm going to be in trouble. Right? If I, you know... all these things we can start being afraid of in this. You know, if I don't follow exactly the rules, something's going to be wrong. I'm going to have to do, I'll do a lot of prayaschit, a lot of atonement just to make sure. then how much more fear and everything comes like this, so much. So, just like for children at first, maybe there's a discipline, you do this, you get a prize. There'll be some trouble. Okay, so that's beginning of religion. Somebody can have that because just to learn to, but after some time, the child understands as they grow. I study because I want to learn, I want to grow, I want to understand. I want to, do what's good because it's the right thing to do. The other one just gets my mind into trouble. It's not a good thing. Like that, not for a reward in this way. So here also, people will get stuck in these things. So my ideas of the God also, they're very helpful at certain levels. First, maybe just for learning, sticking to dharma, doing what's good. Then also for then afterwards for upasana, to expand my ideas. But then also that eventually I have to see beyond, because there's still ideas in the mind. However I think of the God, that still is an idea. As Swami Shivananda says, by defining God, you deny God, like this, because then it's stuck to that definition. Lord Vishnu will come and appear, and he'll have, he'll have two arms come to you, and you'll say, nope, you're fake. You must be some sort of devil in disguise because you came with two arms. So I don't believe you're not the Lord Vishnu, like this. You're not the real one, no way. Like this. So we have our idea about, and then the idea also, we get stuck with it instead of having to expand. That's the upasana, and then slowly expand. Doesn't mean I have to throw up, if I like that deity, that won't help to connect, I can keep, it's no problem. But I have to see beyond, and then if there's a different one, okay, that's fine also. That's also because it's just a way, in order to expand my mind, to think of some attention to something greater. So at the beginning, one holds on to because it helps to pull oneself out of just feeling insecure, and there's something greater, so that's good. But later on, as one grows, one has to also see beyond that. This is the important thing. One, the great-great-grandfather of a few generations before Swami Shivananji, his great-great-great-grandfather was Appaya Dikshitar. He was very, very highly respected in his day, and he wrote some very well-known treatises on Vedanta. I believe they're in Tamil. So some of you might know these. So in any case, there's the story about him where they say that one time he went to the Vishnu temple, and he's a Shaivite. So he went to the Vishnu temple, and the priest, they didn't let him in. He said, oh dear, Appaya Dikshitar, you're very respected, we have great respect for you, but it's a Vishnu temple. You're a Shaivite, why are you coming here? It's not your place. So they wouldn't let him in. Because that time and place, you go to your temple and this. So he said, okay. So he just stayed there outside and did whatever prayer meditation. So it's early morning where they wake up the deity, do the Subrapatam, and they chant and everything. And just like you wake the person from bed and all, you do like this, and they do like that in the temple, the whole ritual. So when they open it, then their heart, Lord Vishnu, there is in the form of Shiva. So they understood this great saint is there, and they insulted him, so this happened. So they came and said, please come in, but please bring our Vishnu back. We're missing our Lord Vishnu. So so small story like this, just showing how our ideas, how strong the ideas are like this. It doesn't mean if I'm a Vaishnavite, I like to worship Lord Vishnu, and I'm not as attached to Lord Shiva, that's fine. But then I have to learn to see beyond it, because I'm still holding on to ideas like this, where if I worship Lord Vishnu, then Vishnu means that which is all-pervading. So Lord Shiva, he's there too. How can he not be there too? A church is there too. How can it not be? Otherwise, how's that all-pervading? Same with any one of the deities. Like this, the deity helped to expand my attention, see that there's something greater, and then afterwards really look into it. Because after you don't find it anywhere else, it's everywhere, but where, how can I find? Well, then Vedanta finally says, well, you know, it's a misunderstanding. Look, that isn't other than you. So how much I have to look beyond all these three differentiations, because these three are looked into. Jiva, Jagat, Ishvara, these are these three categories. These three, then Vedanta looks into each and every one of them very closely, after looking in them, seeing how they're not different things. So each one has to be understood. Ishvara and Jagat are, so the God and the universe, are very commonly quickly folded into one thing. It's not too hard to do that, because infinite universe, there's something behind, what's behind it manifests that. So it's not too hard to do that. So a lot of time you find they're folded, and then you just have the inquiry into individual and the universal, right? Samashti, universal, Vyashti, individual, and then like this. Or another way that it's done, actually, it's folded a little differently. Folded into what is the consciousness? Consciousness behind me, consciousness behind the Ishvara. And then there's the, so that's Atma. Anatma, well, there's body, mind, and there's universe, that's material. So then it's folded into Atma and Atma Viveka. There's the consciousness principle, there's the material principle. Okay, now. So in any case, whether you fold it this way or that, they're folded like this into making a binary. So in this way, all three are looked at, because really looked at, and then once they're understood, then one can understand how they're not separate things. Like this. So that's how one has to go beyond these three, like this. And then giving up the idea of the multiplicity after that. This is the this is the next one, Dvayam Bhitva. And the base again, the multiplicity comes because of the duality. First you have the two, and then you're breaking into the many. And the two, if you see just very simply, there's I and not I. Aham idam. There's I, and then there's this. These two are broken up in the just now in our Thursday class, then exactly talked about in the mind. There are two different types of parts in the mind, breaks the mind into two parts. One is idam and one is aham. Because in your mind, first of all, when I see you here through this wonderful technology, I see you. So where are you located from my perspective? I see outside, but I also experience in my mind. If the idea of you being there isn't loaded into my mind, how will I experience it? So it's sitting in my mind now. And somebody will say, how is that in your mind in this? It can't be just in your mind. Well, look. First of all, there's a memory, because I'm continuous. So a few moments ago, I'm remembering from what was a few moments ago. Where's that? It's in my mind. Right? You're talking to somebody. They say something. By the time you're replying, where's all they said? It's in my mind. So it had to be loaded. Then I go to sleep. I dream about that person. Where's that person? My mind. So it has to be loaded into your mind. But also I, the individual, is also in my mind. The ego is also in my mind. A part of it is just staying inside. It's me. And so both parts are in your mind. So, but they seem to be separate compartments like this. So in this fifth chapter, the tenth chapter like this, Nataka-dipa, of the Panchadashi, you've been looking into that. And then it's also, if you just see also, when you just observe, there's me, I, and there's not I, Atma and Atma. There's these two. And it seems to be two very separate things, because we don't look into it. Where does I end? Where does not I start? We don't look into it. Kind of like last year, some scuffles between India and China near Ladakh. Because what happens is, the border is unclear exactly where it is. Too hard to demarcate it there. So one side will always say the other side is taking land, going this side of the border. The other says this, and who's right, who's not, we don't know. Because the border, nobody really looked, where is the border like this? Where is it? So here, the border of I and not I. Where does I end? Where does not I start? Can you go and demarcate the border? So yeah, up to the skin here, the edge of the skin. Do you feel where the border, you know, feel the border? You don't feel a border, there's an idea. You say, well, where there's sensation, the body, that's I, where not sensation, not I. But if you really feel the body, there's a bunch of sensation, the bunch of emptiness too, where you don't feel sensation. Is that not I? It's inside the body. Is that not I? Well, I'm not sure. And then in the body itself, as many cells as you have, more, there's more other organisms inside that help the body to work. It's not just you, it's a whole batch of other microorganisms in there doing their functions too. Which one is I, which one is not I, like this. So when you start looking, it gets kind of dicey. Where is I, where is not I? You have a banana, right? Banana isn't I. It wasn't mine, it was on the shelf. I gave money, I bought it, now it's mine. Right? Now I'm chewing it. As I'm chewing it, is it I? Not quite I yet, but partly swallowed, yeah, that's becoming I. Then it becomes part of the body, now it's I. Right? Eventually, different ways, it's going to have to also, whatever came into the body, eventually leaves the body too, one way or the other. Now it's not I. When is it I, when is it not I? So, this idea, the base thing is I and not I. And of course, with the I expand the idea of I by identifying with other things, but just the base of it, Atman, Atma Viveka, is there's an idea I, there's an idea not I. What is, these are still ideas, because when one is dropped, if you drop either one of them, both go away. It's package deal. Buy one, get one free. You say, no, I just want one. They say, no, we don't do it like that. We package it two together. If you want, we're going to send you two. Otherwise, we're not going to give you. You never have one without the other. So they come together, they go. So they can't. So some will give it as, like Sankhya gives it as two basic elements of the whole world. There's the, how do they call it? Pradhana and Prakriti, I think they call spirit and matter. Both eternal, both, but two base ones, then what's underlying that? There has to be something underlying. You can't eternally have multiplicity. And also we know when in deep sleep, or sometimes meditation, you drop one, they both drop, they both go together. So this idea has to be looked at, because I is awareness, I the conscious being, am supporting the idea of this, the idea of I, the idea of I and not I, supporting the two. Without me being a conscious being, would there be a difference between them? No, I'm aware of that. And I'm aware of I, I'm aware of not I. I'm aware of aham, I'm aware of idam. So they're both dependent on this, on me as the consciousness behind. So in the end, this idea of division starts from there, and if one really looks at it, then where are they both? In the Brahma Sutra, in the introduction that Adi Guru Shankara gives, there he says, I and you, to make it even sharper, like this. Because not just talking about, you know, about I'm a conscious entity, and this world is unconscious, is a material entity. But I am a conscious entity, and I'm talking to you, you're also a conscious entity. And saying these are all just ideas, these are also superimposed on that. Because when I say you, it means, in the end, what is it? It still is a manifest world, but in some other, you know, there's an as other person there like this. Still ideas in the mind. I have an idea and I break it. I have ego identify this one and I see there's that one. Now one thing that happens with this then is somebody will say, well, there's an issue here. I have a headache. So I'm the consciousness behind this one. You're sitting there, you're not experiencing the headache. How are we the same one? No, it doesn't work like this. So then I'll say, okay, doesn't work very good. You see my lights in the Alcius. You see this one's flickering. Something's a bit wrong with it. That one's not flickering. How come that one's not feeling the flickering of this one? No, because they're separate things, that's why. But is it the same electricity in them? Yes, it's the same one. So the electricity doesn't feel the... So in this way, it belongs to the bulb, not to the electricity. So the headache belongs to the body-mind complex, not to the consciousness behind it, in this way. So it's not that it's going to... Because if the consciousness would, you know, hold that samskara in it, then the God would be, how much pain the God would have would be all of the pain of all the infinite creatures around the universe. All their suffering would have such a headache for that poor thing. But it's the substance beyond. This is just manifest, which doesn't have the same, you know, same level of reality. So of course, the Ishvara is not going to be suffering from our ideas of this limitation like this. So in this way, so one has to, in this way, the only way then to see beyond this dvaita, this division, is by understanding, is by this, by viveka, by vichara like this. And then seeing that the same one reality is the base for both I and not I. Both are known in light of the awareness which I am. And actually, one very nice way to see this also is you say, okay, this world is, right? This TV in front of me here is. Okay, it's here. Is. You know, this house is. This world is. Very good. Then you say, I am. What do you mean by I am? Meaning, I am, so meaning I can tell that I exist. I can tell that something's there, that there's a conscious thing here, and somehow I identify as that. So you say I am, but why don't you say I is? What's different? It's the same thing, is. Because I, I'm aware. What is that is? The awareness is. The existence is. Yeah. And I know it is. Yeah. Okay, so I is. So I is. So this isness. This in front of me is. So what do you mean is? It means it's some sort of presence. Some sort of tangible presence. So is the presence I is. And the presence this is. Is that is something different? Existence, presence, same presence. Just one of them is with identify, one not. You see the sports, you know, you go and watch the Olympics. They just had the Winter Olympics. And you say, this one is the American skier. Oh, this one is the Chinese skier. Oh. So... And the other, somebody on the other side, well, this is the American skier. This is the Chinese skier. Oh, yeah. So you separate this and this, the two of them, because of idea, but really, two things, which are really the same thing, somebody's skiing, this. So I call this, which, what is it? It's awareness. Because it's within my awareness, something reflecting the awareness somehow. Some limited idea of the awareness. And I say I am. Some other limited idea of the awareness of consciousness. And then I make a wall between them, and that wall you can never find. Because the wall is made out of avidya. The separation made out of ignorance. That's why if you look for it, you can't find, just like you can't find the dome of the sky. So you can't find what separates, but you take it as so real in this way. This is what happens. But because it's so deeply ingrained, as we said beginning the class also, then I don't really, we don't look into it closely because it seems so vague and so this, you know, how can I do? And nobody else can look into it for me. That's the interesting thing. people say, you know, the way some of the religion works, the priesthood has it set. People depend on us. We do the worship for them. Again, I'm just saying as one idea. I'm sure there are very many people who do it, which are doing very, you know, wonderful social work, wonderful, many wonderful things. But this is just a way that can also happen, that probably does happen. It's very comfortable. The people come. We do something nice, people feel good. They support. We can sleep comfortably, have food in our belly, a warm place, and with some respect, and then we continue, no problem, like this. I just continue doing the ritual, and I'm supported, no problem. The other person comes, feels good, and we're all happy in our place and done. Nobody, and without looking deeper into it. So it's a critique of religion. Doesn't mean religion has to be like this and that everybody practices, but it's a trap. That's a trap one has to be very careful of. Because then it frees me from really looking deeper into it, just to stay on the surface. I feel good, I'm okay, I'll come back next time. Again, refill. You know, so many years, ashram, yoga, meditation, we do good. You come, you do the yoga, you feel very good. Good, I'm filled, I'll go back. Twice a week, I feel more stressless, I go, I feel more balanced. Okay, very good, let me go home. But then never looking at, just keep tuning it instead of really looking deeper into the source of the issue. So here it says, well, have to look into the source of the issue, and no system can do it for you, and nobody else can just point in the point, you know, the Vedanta just points, this is where you have to look. Look closely here, understand. But then one has to look for themselves, nobody can do it for you. So that's why one has to really, you know, really learn how to put it there, learn how to look at it. Vedanta is saying, here's a way you can look at it so you can be clear for yourself. Okay, so really look at it, okay. There's I, there's this, I'm aware of both. They're both depending on me, the awareful being. He points at that. Now look at it for yourself. Confirm for yourself like this. So this is what happens then, is it's one has to do it, one has to look into it. The Shravanam is pointing to it, and then one has to really look at it. And so many other ideas will come, doubt, so one has to carefully, okay, there's some other argument that comes up, the mind has some other ideas, we'll look closely at it. Okay, the mind says differently like this. So it's contradicting it. Well, which one? Is this idea in the mind correct or that? Well, the idea of the mind comes and goes. I'm aware of that idea before it's there, when it's there, when it's gone. When the doubt is there, I'm aware of the doubt too. Like the cloud that's hiding the sun, the cloud brought it up, the sun brought it up, created it. In the light of the sun, we see it, and because the sun will evaporate and go after some time too. Can the cloud really cloud it? No, like this. I remember two times I saw Swami Krishnanandaji, a brilliant disciple of Swami Shivananda. First time I'd gone to India, so we went up after being in the south for yatra, seeing many of the temples of Tamil Nadu, Kerala. Then we went up to Uttarkashi for a few days, so Rishikesh on the way up and down. So every day he used to sit in a certain place, and anybody can come ask questions every day like this for decades. So somebody was telling him he has some doubts. So Swami Krishnanandaji was saying, whose doubts are they? Look into whose doubts are they? That time I didn't understand what he's talking about or anything. Now maybe a little bit insight through this. Okay, there's a doubt. Well, you know, how can it be? It seems that I'm just this limited one, that God is so, you know, compared to this. Well, where did this thought come from? Whose thought is it? It's mine. Where's this idea of limitation from? I'm aware of it. Where's the idea that something's so huge? I'm aware of it. So what's supporting both of those ideas? I, the awareful being. So which one is first? I, the awareful being, or that idea? When the idea is there, I, the awareful being, in and through it? Yes. So that doubt itself is like the cloud that came up because of the sun and is kind of seems to cover the sun. Without the sun, you can't be aware of it. Without me being the awareful being, how can I, if you doubt, even come into being or be there? So in this way, one has to keep looking at it to see for oneself, because this points it out very clearly, but clearly points it out, but then I have to look into it. So that's like this. So the text like this, he's pointing out again and again in different angles, but then pointing out, so say, look, and then I have to look. Nobody else can, you know, look for me. This is how it is. So that's a little bit about this verse that we just went through, looking beyond whatever numbers are there, still, whatever thing is there, I'm the awareful being, and because I'm the awareful being, then those can be there, those can manifest. Without the awareful being, where is it? Like the story that if you, no matter how many zeros you have, if there's no one before them, it's just all zero. So my guru would say, you know, okay, I'm American citizen, zero, right? I own many ashrams, zero. He used to say, I'm a minus millionaire. He'd always say, I'm a minus millionaire, because he liked the whole idea, he can borrow money here. He'd borrow money and start ashrams and borrow this, so he'd say, I'm a minus millionaire, zero. But I am, if you don't have that first, they're all just zero. So that's the base. Without that, all just amounts to. So in this way. So let's finish for today. Next week we'll look further. Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadhaya Purnamevavashishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.